Hey, it's the Low Life, Podcast. Do you know anything about that? Can you jam to the top of Cowboys and Services? Ever read the romance movies? Ever experienced a new way? Next way?
You found us. It's the Low Life Podcast. I'm going up some McGillicuddy here with Scum.
Hello.
And Zero.
Clean on the inside, clean on the outside. Hello once again, my friends.
And Shadowlink is absent.
Oh.
he got called into work, and it's the Lord's work.
Hey, baby, those dildos are not going to sell themselves, okay?
God damn it, that was literally on my mind. I was going to literally say those exact same words.
I stepped on your lines, I'm sorry.
Holy shit. We got an episode here. And basically the gist of what's going on here is I'm going to be moving here in the next week. And I'm not going to have internet. So we're going to take about 2-3 weeks off before, between episodes. Apologies, but we just got a lot of housekeeping and shit to do first. And then... we don't want to phone it in. I mean,
yeah. I don't know. You're kind of vital.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Call it a summer break.
Yeah, it's a little summer break. So, and instead of talking about the news, we talked about somebody trying to shoot a Trump or whatever. And then, immediately after that, fucking Biden stepped down and now they're going to run Kamala Harris, and their entire plan at the moment seems to be just calling Republicans weird and crazier. It's working somehow.
And that was all just the last 47 seconds.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what's happening.
It turns out that's all they had to do was just emphasize what we already knew is these guys are like weird little freaks.
Come here. And see.
Yeah. Oh, crying baby.
And time's been compressing lately.
Yeah. It was a hell of a decade last week. So it's just nonstop here, and I'll be glad to be getting out of the DC area for this election in particular.
Yeah, I was gonna say, man, you're moving out of the blast radius.
It's really crazy because it was just how many months ago was it that house blew up here in Arlington?
somehow where you're moving is safer.
Oh no, they blew up a building downtown just to get me, get ready for me. I guess I don't know what the fuck that was. Yeah. I mean, they had to
clear some space out for the new compound.
Yeah.
Got buildings blowing up all over. Just need to find a tunneler in Youngstown, and you'd be just like home. Just find somebody making mysterious tunnels in their backyard.
Trump picks an Ohio guy to be his vice president, and I'm just like, good, you're making room.
Who's like the weirdest little freak of all? Yes.
Oh man. Like he didn't fuck a couch. Okay, that didn't happen. The guy they interviewed, I think I can't remember who it was, like Business Insider or somebody interviewed the guy who wrote the tweet.
The guy who made it up. Yeah, the guy who started the joke.
And it was great. He had this excellent comment. Hang on, let me see if I can pull it up real quick. Doop doo. Gotta look at
this. Is great listening.
I mean, the bottom line is that it doesn't matter because
he's going by Rick, and this extract. It says, perhaps, Rick said, whether Vance actually had carnal knowledge of one or more couches is immaterial. Rick suggested Vance making love to a couch may be best viewed as what Werner Herzog has described as the ecstatic truth. In Herzog's words, a kind of truth that is the enemy of the merely factual, encompassing falsehoods that, quote, make some essence of the man visible. As for his decision to include a fake citation in the post about a man having sex with a couch, Rick claims highbrow inspiration. Not to, quote, not to egghead it up, he said, but he was an English major. Quote, and I do have certain literary tastes. listing page numbers was, quote, in the vein of authors Jorge Luis Borges and John Fowles, who used excerpts and citations, real and invented, to lend an air of authenticity to their fiction. Quote, it's something I've found funny my entire life, he said.
Why is this so good?
Isn't that just the chef's kiss, though? I mean,
it's so fucking good. I love it.
For like the first 7 days of this is reporting, I was like, bullshit. Somebody find me a first edition that they didn't scrub. Bullshit.
Right. Yeah, I just thought this was a meme. Then like you read this and I'm like, why is this so good?
It's so funny. Yeah, like there was something behind it, and that makes it better. To like Werner Herzog said, I could just imagine. He's like, oh, this is what you do. You know, like he's just with that voice and everything.
Oh my God.
So that's been a lot of fun. Everybody knows he didn't do it. And yet, people are still calling him the couch fucker because it's just what you do, man. Like it's happened to so many people throughout my life, including myself. Like people just got, you get like bullied in a certain way. And it's just like, well, you know, that's going to
stay. At least it's like deserved, you know?
Yeah, no, this guy's he's a piece of shit for real reasons.
He's such a huge piece of shit.
He is a piece of shit. He's making money on all the fucking like farmland that this fucking company's buying up. I didn't dig too deep into it because I don't need to.
Lot of layers.
The exact shape and size of his shittery. Like he wrote a book about Appalachia and he's like, I'm from there. Like I am more from there than he is, in fact, you know, and it's, I'm not in the mountain range. I'm just north of it. I'm like one county north, but it's still considered Appalachia. And he's not, he's from like north of Dayton, which is
all right. Now we're getting the, like Ohio fucking, territory beef.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you understand.
The point is, he's faking the funk. Okay, that's the point.
That's exactly it. He's faking the
funk. Now we're getting to like Ohio turf war shit.
Anyhow, well, before we get into what we're going to talk about, we have a Patreon. Check it out. It's we post all of our stuff that we're doing. In addition to the podcast, as we've mentioned, we're also doing fiction. Hopefully some nonfiction here at some point.
Sometimes,
yes.
We got stuff always coming out. We wonderful people keep giving us things to publish, and we love
it. Yes, I swear to you, I will read them. I am but one man.
Yeah, we're all really going through it right now, and it's just bear with us. Like we're fine. There's nothing. You know, we're not going anywhere.
No. It's incredible. It's like keep sending them. If you're not accepted, then I'm sorry. But like, it's just incredible to have this like volume.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
And that's what the Patreon's for. You kick the buck, and that's how we pay them. We get more people.
Patreon pays.
Yeah, you know, who knows what happens next.
Yes.
I might actually be able to get some graphic software.
Oh, my God, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not yet. No, it's just after the move. I don't want to try to learn something in the next 6 days.
And the Patreon prevents us
from having to put ads in our episodes.
Yeah.
Allows us to keep providing this content free of charge.
Yeah. Because we keep getting pitches.
Yeah, again, I think it's time for another horrible sponsor. Let's see who wants to possibly give us money to put out this content.
Scrolling.
Yeah, okay, so this one, a new offering in the burgeoning field of masturbatory, tracking, surveillance. It's a competitor of Covenant Eyes, Mike Johnson's favorite school activity. This is an app that purports to be able to detect the sounds of masturbation in a given target area.
What could this possibly be used for? Wink, 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 wink.
Monitoring dorms, office campuses, churches, metros, city buses, all with a 92% projected accuracy rate.
Projected? What's the demonstrated accuracy?
29%.
29. Less than a third.
Says accuracy can increase in communities that don't consume egg salad or mayonnaise.
Oh, wait. So this is just, Shot Spotter rebranded.
No, I'm sure it's something different.
All right, what's it called?
Shame Namer.
Shame Name.
Shame Namer.
Awful. That's bad. That is not good. That's not a good name.
Yeah. Totally different than Squirt Caller or whatever the other one is.
I knew we're joking. However, if I remember correctly, there really was an app where you can it's meant for weird. It was a weird Christian app where you had to wear
Covenant Eyes.
Yeah. it like monitors when you're jacking off and like,
yeah. And you have a buddy.
Yeah.
And so it like pings your buddy. And so a Republican fella.
Yes. Yes. The story.
He's what's his name? Mike Johnson. Was it like Dick Longhorn? I don't know. Who gives a fuck? He was talking about it. Who was he? He was,
I don't know. It was like he was his son's quote unquote buddy for this.
Yeah.
Or his son was his buddy. It was something demented. It's but I'm weird, like,
man. Is it a jerk circler? I think they call it a jerk circler.
Jerk circler. This is a family show.
No, it's fucking not. And this comes around to my burning question of the movie. We're going
to. Well, here, let me. All right. So that's what we're doing. Oh, we're doing that. We're doing a movie review. Thanks. Good job, Scum.
You're welcome.
God.
Whoa, what was that?
That was an incredible sound.
Whew. Jesus. Thank God.
Oh, man. Okay, cool. All right. Well, we're doing the 1984 Michael Crichton film.
Yeah. Really? Yeah, it's like that, bud.
Come here. Anyway. It's the 1984 Michael Crichton film, written and directed by Michael Crichton, by the way. Runaway, which is the story of a sentient mustache with vertigo that hunts down renegade robots and the bass player that created them.
Incredible.
Bingo.
It's roll credits.
Yeah. Jacket cover.
We got Selleck's mustache.
Oh, man.
We got, like, VCR robots that I don't think he fucked.
No one has sex with any of these toasters.
Surprise. Missed opportunity, if you ask me. Missed opportunity.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's got Tom Selleck. It's got Cynthia Rose of Flashdance fame. It's got Gene Simmons of satanic music fame.
This was the year after they took their makeup off.
Kirstie Alley from Cheers.
Yep.
Should have kept it on.
My favorite thing is, what's her name? Cynthia Karen. Whoever played Karen. What was
she's
her name?
Incredible.
Cynthia Rhodes.
Yeah. Did you know that she was also in the band Animotion for like an album or two? She was in a bunch of music videos.
What did she play?
She sang on Room to Move.
Because she was really good in this film.
She's in a lot of dance movies. She was in Saturday Night Fever sequel. She was in
Dirty Toto's Dancing video for Rosanna.
There you go. Huh.
Yeah, no, she was definitely around.
There's one scene we're going to talk about where I'm like, wow, she's actually really good. Like,
she's a better actress than this role is. Like, honestly,
yeah, everyone is except for Gene Simmons.
Like, he sucks. I'm sorry.
He's really bad. He's like the opposite of fucking
anyone could have played that role. Bad.
Mick Jagger was so enjoyable, and so I saw this movie when I was like 11 or 12 or something, or 10.
Yeah,
we were being babysat. Like, my grandma had it on, and we were just watching it.
This is one that that I watched really early too. I must have been about 8 years old or so, and it wasn't one that we went to the theater for. It's definitely one that got a lot of TV movie play afterwards, which makes sense because it's kind of written like a TV movie. I was actually surprised to learn it had a theatrical release when we went back to watch this, but this is one that I really haven't seen since I was like maybe 9 or 10 years old, because every time I'd seen it come on TV or come on, I just went right straight past it because I did not remember it being a good movie at the time that I watched it.
Well, I remember really liking it because I liked the robots and stuff, but I also remember it kind of, there was just like a moment that scared the living shit out of me.
Oh yeah, the trauma. That definitely gave me some childhood trauma. We can talk about that too.
Oh, for sure.
I can see that. Yeah, this is my first time watching it. I just literally watched it today for the first time.
Okay.
And I was just delighted. It's a delightful movie. There's like, there are scenes that land. There are some that don't. There are some, like, you know, largely the only roles I don't think that landed was literally just Gene Simmons. But there are some points of this film that were really effective.
They do a lot of really great concepts, but not all of them are well executed. And a couple of the story points is kind of like, I've read a couple of Michael Crichton books. I like them. You know, they're whatever. They're like a step up from Clive Cussler. But the story on this one, it makes me wonder, does he have like some, you know, cocaine use related discontinuity with his writing that's prevalent in a lot of 80s movies? Because this one, there's a couple of things that just don't work out. Don't add
writing novels, you know.
Well, you got to understand, he was a director. I mean, he did couple of my favorite movies. He did The Andromeda Strain, which
Westworld.
Is a very, and he did Westworld with Yul Brynner.
Yeah.
And I'll say The Andromeda Strain is a very slow film. But goddamn, it was like the first real plague movie that kind of fucked me up.
Yeah.
But he always does this thing where he'll throw like one silly little detail in it that is like, huh, all right. you know, like in, for example, in Andromeda Strain, there was this woman and the screen was blinking in such a way it kind of like triggered not a seizure, but she just like zoned out. And it was like a thing that none of the scientists in the room would have known. You know what I mean? Because it's like a completely different field in the whole nine yards. And like this one, it had a couple of bits in it that were just like, what are you, why, what is this going to pay off? Like, what the fuck are you doing?
Mm, I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
We'll get to it. We'll get to it. But anyway, yeah. So this movie is interesting. I think I like it for different reasons now. But it's a bad movie. Well, like it is not a good movie.
Yeah, like, I was going to say, coming back to it, it has a lot more to say for it than I thought. I thought I was going to watch this once and just like kind of like comment from the sides. But after watching it, I was like, there's a lot more to talk about here because there's so many things that are like just short of the mark of being, you know, perfect.
Calls, yeah. Like there's this one bit at the very beginning of the movie. They get a call and they're getting ready to like, I think it's like the one where they're going to hunt down the farm robot at the beginning.
Yeah, the very first call.
This whole thing is like their entire job is there. The point is Selleck and Karen are cops. This is like a whole department. Yeah. This is a world where robots exist. And sometimes
there's like three people in the department because Karen has been added.
Yeah. And they're kind of like a cross between meter maids and,
it's very like, blue. If they weren't cops, this would be very blue collar.
Yeah,
it's a very blue collar fucking like, job.
They never really explain why it has to be cops and like why there wouldn't. But this is the 80s also. And this is supposed to be taking place in some vague, like as far as Crichton's concerned, this is just the next year. You know,
it's kind of like traffic cop meets meter maid role kind in of. This world that they have. And that's the other weird thing is like you don't get any title cards at the beginning that says like this year. You're just kind of expected to get that it's the near future.
Mm-hmm.
I think they kind of missed the mark by making it too average. It's like too, and this is coming from someone who watched it back then when I was a kid. And like,
I kind of like it that it had it kind of presents this thing to you of like here, cause everything is, the technology is all very grounded in.
Well, first of all, the fucking robots are just accepted part of a society. So this had to have been happening for a while and people have to like see the value in having them around. And I cannot understand that for the life of me. Because these things are dog shit. They are dog shit fucking robots.
They don't really solve any problems.
No, they all have like one arm or two arms. Like the first robot you see pulls a fucking like bug off a plant and then grinds it up, which is great. It's the most functionality you will see in a single fucking robot for the rest of the movie. Because all the other ones just have one arm. Like you see the cop. What's his name? Marvin is doing something, and this robot arm comes up and adjusts the light, and it
for no reason. Yeah,
there's so much. What the fuck in this movie?
There's certain ways that they chose to present the world that are like. And for this whole thing, I'm going to keep saying this. A lot of choices are made. Not all of them are good choices in this movie.
Nah.
The one you just described is one where just like out of nowhere, this robot arm comes up to adjust a light that didn't even look like it needed adjusting.
It was kind given of no prompt to do it.
It's kind of a little parable of like the point of all of these robots. It's like, what are you doing? Why are you adjusting the light? I don't want you to adjust the light.
Yeah. What if Siri was in the way?
Yeah, because like the whole
always is like physically in the way the whole time.
The entire department, like, and yeah, it's made up of like three people. But the point is that this whole department of this police precinct exists that's literally meant to like turn off malfunctioning robots that apparently happens enough where like this has to be a police thing.
Yeah.
When does he sleep in this movie?
Never.
He's getting call after call after call after call. At one point, his kid chastises him for swearing. Like, oh, we gotta. All right, let's just blow through the beginning. What the opening of this movie sets up is Karen's coming in to become his new partner. Okay.
Yeah, we open in the police station where he's being introduced by the police chief, who is actually the police lieutenant is the commissioner from Police Academy, the comedy movies, which is
amazing.
Another problem I noticed with this movie is like it really struggles to find a tone and stick with it.
It does not do comedy well at all.
No.
There are some slapstick scenes in here that are just like, oh.
The other thing about before we dive right into it, this was another attempt of Selleck's to like really just become more of like an action sci-fi type hero. I'm not like a film buff, but I'm a movie guy, and I know some parts of movie history that are interesting. One of them is that sort of I want to say struggle, but the competition between like Harrison Ford and Tom Selleck. Tom Selleck, right after he tested for Magnum PI, he did a screen test for Indiana Jones, and he got the part, and then they cut him because he couldn't do that and Magnum PI, and he always kind of regretted that. And like going on and seeing how, you know, Harrison Ford did Blade Runner, which, you know, didn't have critical success, but he was good in it, and it did well for his career. I think Tom Selleck kind of felt like, oh, okay, Cyber Cop, Chasing Robots, I can do this. Yeah, I can make this happen for me.
And it fit into a schedule.
Really fell flat, unfortunately.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, because like we were saying before, the cop thing, I think this could have been a very different movie if it wasn't meant to be like a police movie.
Well, that's the thing, is Crichton writing it wanted it to be like, oh, I just want this to be like a police drama, a police procedural with just some robots sprinkled in. I'm like, my buddy, that does not sound interesting.
No.
Yeah.
Because it really
isn't. Like, the villain, they describe him at one point as just like a spoiled rich kid. And it's
that's nailed it.
We'll get into the villain, but that's one of the things that really falls kind of flat. There's a lot of opportunity there to make it a lot better than
there's
it was.
There's so much.
Because I want to make it clear, I like this movie. And I think it's
worth watching. Yeah, I absolutely recommend it.
I do like how it's presented to you, how these things are considered mundane. It's just, I think it would have been more interesting if it just wasn't a cop movie.
Yeah, I mean, and it opens up with like a Jerry Goldsmith score. It's Jerry Goldsmith. I hate always being shitty like this, but it's Jerry Goldsmith doing his best John Carpenter score. And like really at first, and again, this is kind of, when you open it up, you come in, it's like they're trying to make Tom Selleck this like tough, smart guy. Like they've got a lot of close-ups of him in these horn-rimmed glasses and his mustache, and he's looking at circuit boards, and it's kind of like when they pull back, it absolutely reminds me of in the mall by my house where I used to go when I was a kid. There was a Radio Shack, and there was a security guard for the Radio Shack, and he looks exactly like the security guard did for the Radio Shack. Like,
nice.
To a T. And that's supposed to be like, you know, tough but smart. Like, that's what we're getting.
But that's the other interesting thing. This movie doesn't even do that. Like, I almost have to give it points for kind of making him a cop against type, because the Vertigo thing, he totally like just wimps out. Like right at the beginning of the movie, they're going to their first call. There's this farming robot that's going out of control, and he's on the helicopter, and he's fine for a second. Then he looks out the window, and he's like, she's like, "Are you okay?" And he's like, "Ah, yeah, I don't like heights, never did." And she's like, "Oh, my brother has that," and he's like, "Shut up."
Yeah, basically. Like, I guess.
Yeah, y'all should stop the podcast and watch this fucking movie. It's on Tubi for free. You just gotta. You know.
So
commercials actually add to the experience, believe it or not.
You don't really like learn about him, a lot about him in the first couple scenes. The chief tells him this. He's talking to the new partner, but he is like absolutely checking out her ass, really obviously, before they get into the helicopter. And then we learn that he has vertigo. Plot point might be important. But they're taking this out to like a field. There's like a mad agricultural robot, and they land. There's some good old boys on the floor on the ground. They're saying, "Yeah, this robot went crazy. We got to go find him. Go find him."
Can we talk about this? So
yes, I hope we do.
This helicopter lands. Okay, they're walking toward it, and I have to. If there's one point that is definitely against this movie, it's the audio. It's so dog shit because there are so many of these scenes that try to do that thing that Robert Altman does. Except he knows how to do where you have several people talking at once. And I don't know how they had this mic'd or if it was all ADR or whatever. But
overdubbed.
They're overdubbed. They're like walking toward these farmers and they're just going, "Yeah, hey there, buddy." And then the other guy's just like, "Oh, yeah, robots all." But they're all talking at the same time. And it's like, I don't, what the fuck is happening? It's like taking me out of it. And then
it didn't happen frequently enough where I cared.
Well, there was that one. And then there's the one later before they got to do the surgery. Like where everybody's talking at the same time. And it's like, I don't know what's happening.
I really didn't notice it. It didn't really particularly bother me that much.
I noticed it more the second watch.
Okay.
Where I was just like, this is why I was looking at my phone the last time I watched this. Because I could fucking hear what the fuck was happening.
Part of the other thing is this movie is far too long. Like a lot of it could have been left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah. I have a lot of, I think
the whole romance angle is just dog shit.
We'll get into that. Because
but yeah, they...
You have to understand, Karen is adorable.
Yeah.
She is so cute.
She's incredible.
She's like the best thing about the movie in terms of like her role and the way she chose to play it and stuff. Like she's very good. There's some fucking scenes in this movie that hit really well. And she's a big part of that. But
it seems like I said, like without even trying, like she acts better than the part is written.
Effortlessly. Yeah.
But they get to the farm and they're actually chasing. It's like a little 3 foot by 3 foot agricultural robot with tank treads.
Love this
and
thing.
Like
And it's carved a path through the corn.
Yes.
This it's all zigzagged part, and shit.
It's again, it's arms. Just like kind of dumb. And I'm kind of like, is this supposed to be a comedy? Because like she grabs it and she lifts it up, but then it starts going haywire. And I'm like, if you've already lifted the robot up, just turn it on its side, lady. Like,
yeah, if you can pick it up, like, it sparks and a couple, it blows up a little bit.
But then the robot escapes her and they're running around like the Keystone Cops out in the corn. It's
Tom Selleck actually falls.
Yeah.
They both do like a Pratt dive for it. And there's like almost like a Benny Hill soundtrack you want to hear behind it. It's really silly.
They may as well have been chasing a chicken.
And then it explodes while they're near it. And off in the distance, you see this like little tiny mushroom cloud kind of like rising. And when they cut back and the farmers are in the foreground, you're looking at their backs. And one of them's like, oh, it's like goddamn World War III.
First thing I thought was like, it would have been a lot funnier if he said like World War IV.
Yes.
That would have been great.
Yeah, because he's just tapping into the Cold War shit at the time, you know. But anyway, so they carry it out on like a stretcher made of like tinfoil. And it's funny because they're both covered in smoke, but she's clear around her eyes because she actually had her fucking goggles on, which is a thing that we're going to be talking about for the rest of the fucking movie.
Well, he tells her like several times, like, put on your gloves, put on your goggles. He makes a point of it.
Yeah.
And then also, I think I'm going to maybe putting a drawing a line through this now, but pretty much every robot call they respond to, they end up breaking the robot. Like that's their job.
One time, another one of these slapstick scenes, it's actually should have been hilarious, but in fact, it comes off as like unhinged.
Yeah.
We'll get to that.
Isn't it emphasized that like the only thing they really have to do is just hit the off switch?
Well, that's one of the first things he says. As they're walking out to the first mission, he's like, oh, grab your G-13 shit or whatever the fuck. And she's like, what's that? And he's like, what did you do before this? Like, answer her question, first of all. Second of all, she's like traffic. And she heard that this would like working with him was like going to be a step up or something like that. So he in this moment tells her, hey, okay, here's how the job is done. I'm not going to explain it to you. Just grab this heavy bag of shit. And then they get on the helicopter and she got all the shit on. She got the armor chest plate and the fucking goggles around her neck. And she's like ready to go. And he's like, you know, you might not need all that. And I'm like, I would have slapped him right there.
Well, the other funny part with her introduction, like the other cop, I think his name's Marvin, is like, so what did you do before this? And she's like, oh, I was a dancer and then I hurt my knee and then I tried programming and then I wanted to be a nurse and then like several other things before I got to the bottom of my list and now I'm a cop.
You find out later.
Take me.
You find out later that she's like, oh yeah, I worked construction for a while. And I'm like, darling, you are 24 years old. There's no fucking way. You're like 1980s 24. You know?
No, she's done.
That's so funny though. She goes down a whole list and is like, oh, and then, now I'm,
we literally know more about her and her past than like Selleck, because we just get like one screen of like his military past and that's about it. We know more about
We find out that he's 35 years old in this movie.
Okay.
Supposedly.
And then there's a guy that looks older than him that's allegedly 32. It's the 80s. That's accurate.
They finish up with the robot. They give it to the farmers, and the farmers like, we could have shot the damn thing. Yeah. And then they
just drop it in the truck.
There's one important part when they're heading back and he's on the phone with like Lois. Lois has called for him and he's talking to this Lois person on the phone. Like Lois is a person. How are you, Lois? My day was fine.
So much.
I love it.
And then they get back to police HQ and then we get more exposition about Jack's, you know, past. And Marvin tells us he had vertigo. He was on a call and it was a problem and some people died. And that's when he decided he was only going to do bullshit robots. Cop work, I guess.
He's a sergeant, you know, like,
which is wild.
I don't understand how this. I don't even know what city this is in. Well, you know, like,
oh, it's supposed to be LA, although it looks suspiciously like Vancouver.
Yeah, I'm like, no, it's not. And I thought Miami. Well,
says basically later on, he's like, oh, you know, when I quit actual copping, I took some night courses, and now I'm the head of this department. It's like. Oh,
and also it's only member.
Literally nobody else wanted this job.
Yeah.
Probably because there is a private company. Like at one point they're like, you know, why can't we just like wreck the thing? Or why can't you guys shut it off? And they're like, insurance won't cover it. And I was just like, man, ain't nothing changed in fucking 40 years. You know, like, oh my God, this movie's 40 years old.
So they figure that out. And then like, there's a call in a murder death kill. They get a police call. And Marvin's like, a 709, that means people are dead. And this is a part that I think they really failed an opportunity. So we get next to where there's a crime scene, And what we find out later, I mean, we'll kind of go through it because it's, I think, one of the worst scenes of the movie, but we find out that a robot has killed a person.
Yes. Yeah, there's like two bodies.
With a kitchen knife.
They don't make this, they don't make a point to say that this is, okay, it's kind of unclear. Is this the first time this has ever happened? Because if it is, that's a big deal. A robot's not supposed to be killing people.
I didn't get the sense that this was the first time, because why, there wouldn't be a code for it. But
like it might have been by accident, you know, like where a thing malfunctions and knocks somebody over or something.
Right, so someone dies and it's an accident, but it seems like this was different and it should have made a different splash. Like they could have explored that kind of a angle.
No, they just made the press soap fucking annoying.
Yeah.
Like,
they suck.
This is something that, okay, so there's some press that'll come up in a minute, and like there's a room in the story for them to have more agency, more point of being there, but there is absolutely, it's a really missed opportunity. I think he's really just trying to shit on the press.
Yeah, it's the basic like action movie kind of shtick that went from the 80s into the 90s of press is annoying, gets in the way, cops should be allowed to do whatever to get the job done.
You saw that in Die Hard, RoboCop, like every time. You always just get these like kind of exaggerated, like we demand, like that's what they think reporters do, is like, we demand blah, 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 the people have a right and all this other stuff. And it's like, yeah, I mean, ideally, that's kind of what you want. However, this ain't that.
Yeah. No,
we need you in a courtroom. We need you in the like a fucking government meeting. That's what we need.
It gets ridiculous in like 5 seconds.
Yeah. So before
we get into this, I just want to say the elements of this scene are fantastic.
They're amazing.
There's so much potential here.
And
it's so late.
Squandered.
I totally love it.
We open up in the scene. There's one cop standing in front, and it's really confusing because like he's standing in front of a giant loudspeaker, and you hear a baby crying. But again, the sound is so fucked up; it's not immediately clear the baby is crying from inside the house. It looks like they're playing crying baby sounds on a loudspeaker to, I don't know, scare Noriega out.
Yeah.
and there's like a swinging spotlight. I'm like, why is the spotlight not holding still? I guess they want to show that it's a robot spotlight, but it can't hold still, I guess.
Yeah.
So why is that?
There's like bodies on the lawn, too. They cover up with like cloth.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, oh, I hold the bodies here so you can see them. And it's like, what?
Why?
You don't have a morgue?
Yeah.
But then they don't show the body, so there's no point in us PG-13. Knowing that.
Yeah.
But then, like, okay, so we get the details. It's like, it's some kind of domestic unit. And the thing is, like, maybe like 2.5 feet by 2.5 feet, and it's no more than knee height. But we're supposed
to
believe.
We don't see that yet.
We don't see that yet.
We get like cool 3D imaging out circa 1982 of what the robot looks like, vaguely. Right. Like a weird circuit board.
Vector graphics looking thing.
Yeah. We don't know what it looks like at this shit. Right now, they're building up to, holy shit, this robot stabbed some people to death.
Mm-hmm.
And what we learn is that the people were attacked by the robot, managed to run out of the house, and then died of their injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sure. But as we find out, this robot isn't even knee height. So did he kneecap
them? Cut their Achilles tendons? Was he stabbed them in the feet?
And what are they running out with if they don't have tendons? Like,
And they show Tom Selleck, but they don't show us.
No.
This movie does a lot of this.
Yes.
Where it doesn't show you like there's a ton of times when there's a certain particular noteworthy firearm that apparently is shooting, but you don't see it. You don't see smoke come out. Nothing.
Later you do.
And then there's the dad who I guess is his wife is dead is in their cordon and he's being asked some questions, but he's not really being like attended to because he manages to run off later. Mm-hmm. And then somehow, like, our villain just wanders into this police cordon.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Standing behind an ambulance watching. And it's very confusing to exactly what is he doing there at this moment. Who is this?
I get that he's standing there and he's wearing a suit, so he looks like he blends in. But he has that face.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you had a crowd of people and you put him, like, two rows back, that's all you would notice in that
crowd. Yeah, I was going to say, because it's 1982 and he's Gene Simmons.
Yeah.
And nobody else looks like him, and he looks kind of wet.
No one knew what he looked like until the year before. No, seriously. This is 84.
Before we took
makeup off. When they made this. Because 83 was whatever the fuck that album was. Lick It Up or whatever. Who gives a shit?
I was going to say, he looks like shit, but like not as bad. Like, because when we were talking about this, because I was watching it, and I'm like, wow, he looks like shit. He doesn't look that much like shit, but like, he just looks like Gene Simmons, and that's upsetting.
Mm-hmm. But this after that, there's a really cool, another really cool tech part where we see what we would call a drone, and they sort of halted what we call a floater.
A floater.
I tried to see what in what year floater entered common terminology as you know,
turds.
And I couldn't figure it out, so I don't know. It's a bad name, but what they have is a camera drone that they send in, and the camera drone gets shot by the robot who now has a gun, we learn.
It's a 357 because they have shot spotter.
Yeah, exactly. That was another little cool part is that they had shot spotter, and I guess ostensibly we're supposed to believe it worked.
Sure. And it was able to recognize, you know, by sound.
And the floater, like, it's a good effect. Right, like, because obviously this thing is not actually flying in 1982, or maybe it is. Who the fuck?
It's on the smoothest fucking string.
Yeah.
It actually, but they don't. Again, they don't show anything very long. No. They showed it just long enough before like a breeze hit it and it started to wobble. You know what I mean? Like, it's.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting because the ideas are interesting, but like, it's not on screen long enough. But yeah. I'm like, okay, I see what you're trying to do there. You know.
And then he just cuts to its view.
Yes,
and which is a good move.
When they find out that it has a gun, that changes everything, and he decides he's like, he's going to suit up in his special EM suit. He gets out his special little laser pointer for his hand.
I love that. I love it.
You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of Photon.
Yeah.
Laser tag.
The off-brand laser tag.
Yeah.
I love the thing. He's standing outside the house, and before
it has a battery pack with a curly fucking cable.
Yeah. He fucking tests the laser weapon like in the dirt.
But not before. He decides that he's going to forego the disarm robot.
Right.
So in a movie where there's all kinds of robots to do everything, and this one actually makes sense, they're going to, and they do this a couple of times where they forego the robot that could do the job that's dangerous. Anyhow.
Because he's like a programmer who's like realizing that Elon Musk is full of shit. You know, he just hates everything. He's like, nah, I don't trust any of these motherfuckers. Like, I do all day is he's got exposure, you know, like burnout.
It makes sense, they don't, though, because he knows how they work and he knows they don't work well.
Yeah. And he's also, you know, one of those night classes he took was surgery.
Yeah. Apparently.
We'll get to that.
But they don't tell you like exactly what this EM suit is for. Is it supposed to make him invisible to the robot? If it's so, then why is he like so scared when he goes in there? They don't explain it very well at all.
I have no fucking idea what any of those clothes do.
He also says
to them, quit all radio chatter. Any EM frequencies, this thing can detect it and know what we're doing, I guess is what he's trying to explain. But the TV crew keeps rolling and the radio chatter for the police keeps happening. So that didn't happen.
Okay.
Because it reasons, sure. I guess. It's that's how far along these
don't
these
worry about it. They didn't when they made this.
Lunchbox Roomba motherfuckers.
Just let it wash over you. Don't worry about these details because clearly they didn't either.
Yeah, and like he makes a point to say the news camera comes over and starts talking to him. He's like, can you please turn that off because the robot can read that? And then she's like, okay. But then very next scene, the news camera is just following him inside his active crime.
This is the dumbest fucking thing in this movie.
This dude got to go to journalist Valhalla and just get buried in the break room because this dude is like, I'm suddenly like a conflict journalist now. That's what I am.
Yeah, and someone's like waving him away. He's like, get the fuck out of here. This thing has a gun and he's squared up. He's not even like poking around a corner. He's squared up. He's like, I'm going to stay right here. You know, and it's like, the fuck? So, of course, naturally, he gets got.
Yes, immediately.
And again, kind of a dumb part here. Maybe I'm a stickler, but this is a 357 Magnum that needs the sound of a 12 gauge pump action in between every shot.
Uh huh.
Yep.
And also, it magically fires 8 shots.
Yep.
A thick shot revolver that a robot cannot reload. Not this. I mean,
357 is going to be 4 or 6 or 5 or 6.
Well, look, this is what you guys are doing. Is first become 12 years old.
Oh, I saw it when I was younger than that.
Oh, then see, there you go. And
I can access that. It's way more fun to talk dog shit about it.
Yeah, no, because second, you don't think about it.
Here's the problem. Now that I've watched this thing 7 times in my life, 2 in the last, you know, fucking 72 hours. Like,
yeah.
I'm now just like, what? You know, like, oh man, as someone who's done a ton of writing in my life, I have tons of these where like you have this really good idea. It starts off, mm-hmm. but then for whatever reason, like you didn't have a breakfast. The writing just kind of levels off and becomes mundane, and you forget that you're allowed to do anything you want to, you know, in fiction. You can.
Yeah.
That's the bonus part. That's the heavy lifting part.
It's
and this is Michael fucking Crichton, who wrote Jurassic Park and all this other shit, right? Like, the guy, I had a lot of fun reading his stuff. You know, he's a little bit like, everybody thought he was like a bit of a Luddite. And I'm like, you know, a bit. But like, at the same time, he's also saying, well, this is why you don't want to make this thing, because an asshole will get it at some
point. Do you think this is his attempt to, like, I don't know, have fun?
It might be.
Because it kind of feels it like where I'm like, I'm having a lot, like, I was smiling throughout almost this entire film. Well, like,
sure.
The one thing about it is, as much as he talks about the tech, he doesn't moralize about it in this one.
No, right. He doesn't at all.
Yeah, this one's way different than, you know, mm-hmm. like Andromeda Strain, especially, like, he's got a couple
it
of
It feels
bits
like
in
a
there.
Shitty, like, sci-fi novel you find in, like, back in the day in, like, a grocery store, and you're like, with the cover's cool.
Like Cybernetic Samurai.
Yeah, like the cover is pretty badass, right? It's like the movie poster, which actually looks pretty cool for this movie.
Stop right there, because the movie poster, first of all, shows him, again, wearing this EM suit that never comes up again in the film.
Never, yep.
Mm-hmm. And holding the gun that he never uses in the film.
The bolt pistol, mm-hmm. yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
it's a sweet fucking cover, though. It's a great
incredible,
poster.
Exactly. That's that fucking awesome. That fucking sci-fi cover made you pick up that book and brought it home. You're reading it. Is it good? No. Are you having a fucking blast? Absolutely.
It's funny because this movie, let's just say it flopped. It had an 8 million some odd change budget movie.
Wow.
It only made 6. But here's the thing. Even if it's like competition wasn't like Terminator.
Terminator opening weekend 2010. The year we made Contact was that weekend.
Yep. It didn't stand a fucking chance.
Yeah, and that there's movie wasn't even like beloved, but I love 2010. Yeah, there was like 3 fucking killer movies. It E.T. or something? Or was E.T. before that?
That's upsetting.
That I don't know, but this thing just it people memory hold it. It
I
just
like
didn't
this
exist.
Movie more than E.T.
Bad weekend for Selleck.
I like E.T.
So the other most important thing
E.T.'s
we get
fucked up.
Out of that last scene, besides E.T. being fucked up, which it kind of is when you watch it and think about it. Sorry, back to this movie.
Yes.
The other thing we get out of that scene is that the dad was a robotics engineer and that he also mm-hmm. flipped out and fled the scene, even though they managed to save his baby. It's a nice scene.
10-month-old baby.
Yeah, so, like, bringing the baby out and
now,
everybody claps.
Everybody claps? What the fuck is this?
Hold on. Before everyone claps, now we should talk about what this fucking death robot looks like.
Oh, right.
So, this thing...
I'm trying to think of what in your house this would resemble.
This is like, the first time we're seeing this, like, murderous robot.
It's anybody about the size remembers, of a window air conditioner unit.
I was going to say, like, an overhead projector, if you remember those from grade school?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's so small, too. Like, it doesn't even come up to Selleck's knee.
It's like okay, for some of our listeners, it's like 3 Bibles high.
Oh, that, they actually describe how big it is. It's the size of a hat box. That's literally the quote.
Oh,
they really literally said. It's the size
made
of
me
a hat.
Forget that. Okay, so for some of our younger listeners,
that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, there's like, people used to put hats in boxes, so they wouldn't get bent or something. I don't know. Damaged. I've never had a hat.
Probably wouldn't.
You know, for all you Zoomers out there who don't know what a box is.
Well, no, but like hat box was such a fucking thing. And it was a thing I forgot about. You know what I mean? Like until they mentioned it. And then the second time I watched it, it really rang out for me. And I was like, man.
I hate that I know what a hat box is. You've actually made me hate that.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
But again, the other thing that this scene is missing is if this is the first time in this world that a robot has killed a human, it seems like it should be a much bigger deal, but it is not.
Yeah.
So, apparently it happens all the fucking
time. It also killed a fucking cameraman.
Yeah. God bless him. Like
they have all of, that's literally the story you want. And that just, you never, it's they just show up to get in the way. They like, you never see the reports. Like there's no payoff for the fucking press in this.
No, because they're not going to do the RoboCop thing, which would have been incredible.
Yeah.
Like we don't get any fake like news.
Yeah, Crichton is not a Verhoeven, that's for sure. You can do a lot of exposure just from the background.
Yeah,
so he kills the fucking VCR.
he kills it with his little laser pointer.
Yeah,
yeah.
And wait! It starts shooting. He's hiding like near a bed behind like a counter, like in the little girl's room or something. I don't know what it is. And the thing comes, it starts shooting up the room with its extra shots that apparently it has one arm. Even if it could reload, I wouldn't know how it did it. And he rolls under the bed and he shoots at it and hits it. And then he jumps up directly into the path of the, where this thing's aiming the gun to shoot it again. And then after it stops moving, he goes, he turns it off and he walks toward it. There's like, oh my God, there's so just the fucking barrel display, like everything in this movie. No one knows what to do with guns in this
stand
movie.
In the line of the gun. Like, don't just step to the side. Like, it's so annoying.
It's a 357. It's not like a 22. Ah, that hurts.
And I mean,
this thing is going to blow your leg off.
I would say you can be calm because it's fired all its shots, but who knows how many are in there? Just eight so far.
Well, it's Scorringer's gun. So
yeah,
he magic.
He carries the baby out. Everyone claps. And scene. The next scene, we get to Jack's home, where we meet his annoying son, his annoying robot, and for some reason, his partner followed him home. That's kind of weird. Yeah. She's like, "Oh,
his robot." You'll recognize this young man from the classic Flight of the Navigator.
Oh yeah, huh.
Yeah.
He's really annoying in this.
He's super annoying.
So annoying.
This child is like.
I
don't want to stay on the spectrum, but like this performance is not okay.
I am of a certain age where I've seen like enough films that whenever there's like a kid that's going to be in a movie, I immediately tense up because I'm like, because they can make or break it. And I would love The Road, but I didn't think the kid was good.
Fair.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I love the book. And I actually like the movie, but I was just like, there's a few scenes where it just like he wasn't getting good direction. You know what I mean? And I like John Hillcoat too. So like it doesn't make sense for me. But like even, and I've softened greatly on this. Newt. You know, in Aliens.
Well, sure.
Kind of takes you out of it a little bit. You know, like just the way her voice is mixed into the film, like the way she was told to deliver these like lines in a real like weird flat way and kind of stuff like that. And it makes more sense now, but when I was a kid, I was just like, nah, this isn't working for me. And it didn't ruin the movie because you had a walking, you know, fucking forklift fist fight with a queen at the end. You know, that
right.
That's every type we don't of get awesome. That here. We don't get that here at all.
We get a robot bit of a housemaid.
Yeah. The robot housemaid Lois, who is shocker, not a human woman. Gasp.
Wow. What a turn.
She actually looks, like a tower stereo, like, you know, like a really high end.
She's
unit.
A component stereo. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember watching this when I was a kid thinking, like, wouldn't it be awesome if our component stereo could follow us from room to room and blast up tunes?
The woman doing the voice was a big Hanna-Barbera voice actor.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah,
she did a lot of the Laugh Olympics stuff. It, tons, like shit tons. This was a getting her. I cannot remember her fucking name.
Here we get a couple of good pieces of painful exposition where we find out that, you know, the wife is dead and it was a car crash. It's very sad. But the other cool thing about this scene is we discover Bobby later. He's hiding in his bed looking at his tablet, watching like something about dinosaurs or something.
That was a lot of handheld stuff.
Yeah, really good prefiguration here. Piece of tech. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Some of the incidental tech that they don't make much of. Like at the very beginning when he's walking out for the first time to go to the farm, you know, robot, he picks up what looks like a fucking phone off his desk.
Yeah.
And it's like really like, I would not have, or a tracking device or something, you know. Something. And then like later he has to use a phone and the phone is busy. I'll tell you kids what that is later.
Next scene, we get back to the police HQ and they're dissecting the robot from the murder scene the night before. They discover it's a non-standard ship, which then also self-destructs. And
you know who's great?
This scene,
Marvin. Marvin's fucking great.
Marvin's pretty cool.
His partner Marvin, who is great, but this scene also, Marvin gives a really heavy line here. He says, "This robot can kill." At which point, I'm thinking, not a runaway. Passes to homicide. Roll credits. Like
right.
Yeah.
This was on purpose. This isn't mistake. So
yeah, this is no longer
different movie now.
Yeah, exactly.
And if I know anything about the way cops work, he would have been like, kick this to homicide. We're done.
Yep. Don't want to do too much paperwork. Yeah. We've all seen The Wire. We know how this works.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Nobody wants to fucking deal with it.
Yeah. McNulty's not making a serial killer here. Okay. But like spoiler for season five. But
then they get another call for another runaway robot. This one's at a construction site. And again, this whole scene does not need to be in here at all. We already know what they do. You establish with the farm scene.
As they're walking into the construction area.
It just
area,
has nothing to do with the story.
There is no one in this line of people wearing goggles, but around them are literally dozens of machines throwing sparks at their faces, like all over the place.
OSHA does not exist in this world, clearly.
OSHA, PETA, nothing exists here. This
especially
was just,
when you see the elevator.
Well, it's funny, too, because when they talk to the foreman and they're like, this is all automated like this? And she's like, no, most of them are even more automated. No unions, no coffee breaks. It's great.
Yeah. There's another building downtown that is literally being constructed by nothing but robots. And just we will see that one later. That's one of the few things that kind of pays off, but it's also one of the dumbest things ever.
Yeah.
And again, for somebody who says he's not trying to have a message, not trying to be political in his movies, it's just like, guy.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. This whole scene is so dumb. And then the robot, they're like, what's the problem? Like, well, we got a stacker. It's stacking a place where there's no place. And I'm like, what the fuck? And it's just dropping cement bags off the 18th floor.
It's
and
just dropping
feet away from them.
Like 100 pound cement bags that are, again, like you said, landing right next to them, sending up massive clouds of dust. And they just keep standing there. That's not terrifying. The place to stand.
Right. No.
And I would have been running so fast. Like that was the thing that took me out of it is like, okay, this thing's chucking these bags.
Yeah.
And they're just standing there as like this thing is impacting next to them and they're just looking at it. And I'm like,
this was written in a drunk weekend where he forgot that, you know, a company, any, especially a construction company, is going to have somebody on staff that could turn the fucker off.
Oh, yeah.
And because,
he's trying to separate, oh my God, it'd be like me, every machine shop. You have a big red panic button or, you know, a lockout tag out, you have it. And if you don't do it, you have a maintenance guy on staff or two, and they will go take care of that.
See, that's the thing. This is what made me feel like this is a blue collar job where this is like the guys you call in to do it for isn't this part where they say for the insurance, why couldn't you guys do it?
Right.
And it's like, well,
insurance
doesn't allow it. So I'm like, okay, so in what's a better movie, you would call the robot people who
exactly.
And they would just come in. I'm like, all right, roll up your sleeves. Let's
Geek Squad.
This. Yeah.
It's almost like the companies that build these are absolved of all responsibility after they've been created. Elon Musk would love this movie.
Don't care.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
We'll let him watch it.
So, I mean, he's the villain. It's really great.
So again, we really didn't need this scene, but it reinforces the fact that he's afraid of heights. Because, and then again, it's sort of like he's kind of resigned to this attitude that I'm not enough of a man to be a full cop. So you can just take this job.
Go get him, Karen.
And she does. I love this moment where she's going up in the elevator. Okay, so they have earbuds. They have wireless Bluetooth earbuds.
That's the other cool little piece of cool. This scene.
Yeah. I really like that.
That elevator. That looks terrifying.
Yeah, it's just a construction. It's just an open cage. And she's going up in it and she's like, hey, I'm going to blah, blah, blah. Okay, I'm here and I'm talking and I'm blah, blah, blah. And blah, blah, blah. Static, static, static. And then he's just like, fucking zeroed out, he's 1,000-yard staring at
breathing in cement dust.
But the bags are just falling next to him, and he totally gets dosed. But she the whole time is just having the time of her life. She's just narrating everything. It'd be like, I'm going to the refrigerator, and I'm going to get a soda. step of this,
which
is
makes
hilarious.
Me wonder why this is a wasted scene because it's like. Okay, so why aren't we at Karen's point of view while this is happening?
Right.
Why are we just looking? I know Selleck is Selleck, so of course the camera has to be on him. But why aren't we following Karen around then? I mean, we kind of did it with Lois and RoboCop. Why not?
Karen is everything in this movie. She's brave and competent.
She really
what the fuck?
She's a cool character. Okay. She's great.
Subjectively speaking, Tom Selleck is a handsome fella. Objectively speaking, she has no reason to be attracted to this guy.
No. Yeah. Absolutely not.
He's kind of just weird.
That's you know? But this is also where we get a little weird, very revealing lines that from, I didn't write the whole thing down, but Selleck, they're talking, they're coming away, and Selleck says something to the effect of nothing works, right? People don't work right, relationships don't work, so machines aren't perfect. And I'm just,
You know what? So what I got from that is a really, really wordy way to say garbage in, garbage out. Because he's just like, well, people are flawed. Like, we can't get along with each other. We build the machines. The machines are going to be flawed. Like, that's it's like kind of the A to D logic sort of thing. But
once in a while, a lady gets stabbed, you know?
It's so fucking cynical, though. It's like really funny. And it's like, I just imagine it's just the kind of thing where, like, the people who have to, like, find horrible images on Facebook to ban. How after a while, you're going to get fucking just cynical and fucking burned out on that shit if that's all you're exposed to, if that's your job. And this guy, all he does is experience fucked up robots. You know, like, this might have been the first human murder that they don't make a big enough deal out of, but this thing probably killed a bunch of pets. You know, all these various, you know, robots and stuff. I'm sure there have been accidents and stuff like that before, so he's never going to a happy scene.
Yeah.
Good point.
Meanwhile, Karen is just having the time of her fucking life. Like, she's such a delight.
She's having a blast.
Compared to this asshole, where it's like, he's not even the interesting brooding of most, like, action hero, like, movies.
He's just afraid of heights.
Just afraid of heights and is kind of a dick.
And you find out through various things that, like, okay, so that was 2 years ago that this happened. But then that's also, like, his wife died 2 years ago in a car accident, you find out. And everything. It's like, this dude 2 years ago, like, was the end of the world for his
piled house. On.
Yes.
Yeah. So this makes a little more sense why he would maybe take a step back and maybe just do robot shit for a while.
Sure.
But he's also got that on his back.
Yeah.
And I was just waiting for this movie to reveal that it was actually Luther that killed, like, his wife.
Yeah,
and
I know, right? Years ago, so at the top waiting of the building. For that garbage.
You never get Luther's not interesting.
It might have actually made Luther a little more interesting, right? Okay, so next scene, though, we get them. They're back at the crime scene, and they're doing some good police work, and they have a Ring doorbell that they're going through the footage on, and they find out that one guy in the Ring doorbell apparently has erased most of his being on the Ring doorbell, but he didn't erase all of it, which is that's just dumb. Yeah, and that guy is Luther, but he's coming in as Acme Robot Repair. Mm-hmm. Come on.
I know. He's the master of disguise, though, guys.
So they're like, okay.
Oh, this motherfucker.
This is master the guy villain. We need to find out about. And then, like, the next scene just cuts to Luther. And let me just start with this, okay? Because, again, Luther, Gene Simmons, we cut to him, like, in a lab in a clean suit. And, like, you see him looking into a microscope. And when he looks up, I'm sorry, but all I saw was Pauly Shore.
I snapped that picture.
Pauly
Sure. I rewound it. I got my camera out. I got real fucking close to it, and I took a picture.
Weezing the juice,
because he's got that. He's doing that, like, his face is down, but his eyes are looking up, trying to look spooky and shit. He just doesn't. He looks like the angriest banana left in the bunch. Like,
yeah, no,
it's really fucked up.
No,
and this is the part where we're introduced to Luther, who is ostensibly, like, the main villain, the mastermind for the movie, and it's just really, really underwhelming. Like,
so he didn't have to try out for this role. Crichton approached him and didn't make him read lines or anything. He just cast him, and then he didn't even give him his lines, like, for the movie before they shot the scenes.
Yeah. What?
He kept telling him, just do something crazy.
What the fuck?
He doesn't do anything crazy in this movie.
No, he sucks.
Except for one thing that's so dumb that we will talk about.
It's some really bad direction on his part. And, like I said, it's just, the lines are delivered. And like you said, I saw some interviews with Gene Simmons. He was like, yeah, Michael was just like, oh, no, you don't have to memorize your lines. Just come in there and, like, you know, be bad guy.
Is he, like, starstruck with Gene Simmons?
That's what I'm thinking.
What the fuck?
But that's then Gene's like, oh, so I didn't want to play him like a bad guy. I just played him like an animal who would kill anybody that got in his way. I'm like,
that's not a good villain.
That's a bad guy.
Gene, yeah.
That's what that is.
I hate that. I hate that I know that now.
We're supposed to get, like, you know, the idea that he's also a scientist. He gives, like, a little dumb exposition speech. It's really dull. But then, and, like, it's his accomplice who is making the murder chips, you know, who at this point is already... It's already done, but he's asking questions. He's like, well, what is this for? Who are you going to give him to? And Gene Simmons just so matter-of-factly, he's like, I don't know, mafia, terrorists, whoever's going to pay me the most money. It's just so boring.
And the guy's like, all right, well, pay me. Pay me. Like, I just want to get paid.
Give and this is money. Like, this is like the moment.
Yeah, I want my cut.
Yeah.
This is the moment when I realized, like, Luther is really just like another off-brand version of like Elon Musk. I could just like
it would have been more interesting if we got scenes, because he does seem kind of boring as a human being, even though he's meant to be like Mr. Evil. I think it would have been more effective if we just got a scene of him like, I don't know, staring at a wall or something and freaking out where
or like licking a battery.
Like he's just this weird dude who's just like
he broods.
Just get up in somebody's face. Like if they don't want to buy weapons from my platform, threaten me with money, fuck them. Seriously.
And they gave him a he has a cool gun.
His literally has a bolt gun, and it's never explained what this, like, did he develop this piece of technology? Like, his whole thing.
It's a lot.
We're getting ahead of it.
There's like a big exposition here where he's talking to him, and it's just like, seriously, the dialogue is, I just want to be like, are you wearing a wire? Like, why are we making the murder chips? Speak into my collar.
Right.
But this is the scene where we get the first view of our Robo Spider, which, let me tell you, childhood trauma.
Yep. Fuck yeah, I love these things.
Up until I'd seen this movie, I was a little bit more of a, like an engineering brain kid. I was really into Erector sets. I was really into those Zoids, you know, the wind up dinosaur toys that you build.
Oh, yeah.
After I saw acid spitting Robo Spiders, I kind of turned off to all that.
Because it's all like injected into your throat.
Oh, especially when you learn what's in them too. Like literally at the end of the movie, it's like they're injecting acid into your body.
It's really
they're
dumb.
Terrifying. They're dumb. They're stupid as fuck.
Why
However,
acid?
I love
Why
them.
Acid?
Yeah. I love them. They,
I'll tell you my problem with them. Okay, and it's a scale thing. All right, if there's a thing
that robot
is supposed to be scary to me. And it's the size of a chihuahua. If I can stomp on it and it's not a threat anymore, I'm not scared. Either make the spiders like the size of tarantulas and numerous, or make them like the size of a Boston Dynamics dog. Those two sizes are scary. In between, chihuahua size, not scary.
Because they're wind-up toys. They are essentially Zoids.
Zoids look cooler.
And they're meant to be sneaky, but they're loud.
And clatter?
Yeah.
Like, the concept is interesting, but the execution, like, this is just so dumb. But
whenever you see them, they're just doing an impression of, like, popcorn.
So Luther double-crosses his partner and leaves one of these spider droids to kill him, which on top of it, so Luther is ostensibly an executive at this company, and he's doing a deal in his workplace, and he murders his accomplice in his workplace.
I didn't even get the impression that he was like, I guess this is how boring he is. I didn't even get the impression that Luther was like an executive in this company.
No, I thought he was just a scientist.
I thought he was like a scientist mafia guy.
I think they talk later about him being like a doctor and having some education, but the point being, just don't shoot.
Well, everybody was taking night classes in this fucking movie.
He kills this guy in his workplace, leaves the body. Yeah. And then also we never catch a case from this. There's literally a murder bot that doesn't get reported to the police, doesn't get brought up.
Because this thing just hops on you, injects you with, you know, fluid X, and then fucking explodes and lights you on fire.
Do you know who wrote this movie? I know you think it's Michael Crichton, but it was actually me in a time machine at age 14 on 4 Jolt Colas. And then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened. You know, that's very much how this is thing.
Like I said, when you're
constructed.
Because it's a thing, breaking this down, it's dumb as shit. But while I was watching this, breaking it down, this movie's dumb. Uh-huh. But when watching it, I'm just like,
weird pace to it, because he's always on cases. You never see him like take a shit or fucking sleep. Like, and he's fine. He's like just fine the whole time.
No, okay, hold on. Because imagine any of the other movies that we watch from like the 80s where it's like, all right, now the protagonist is going to take a dump and this is going to humanize him. To us.
Well, I'm just saying, like, this cat is always on the job. Like, he's barely, like, he goes home to his kid at one point. He's like, he gets a call, you know, and it's just like, the fuck, man?
Well, my alternate theory
is, I hate Lois too, but I mean, shit, you got a kid, you know,
my alternate explanation is the Android's dream of electric sheep theory, where he's just an android and he doesn't know it.
Yeah.
He's a replicant.
The hard boiled treatment.
It's
like a prequel to that anime series, Pluto.
Right, so that was a poorly thought out scene. It's like they make Luther do a lot of bad things. That on top of it too, like the last one. Okay, so he's trying to cover up this murder chip conspiracy. So he uses a murder chip to kill one of the people's family. Luther.
Oh, and the murder chips explode.
Yes. But still, this doesn't leave you without a anyway.
Then he pulls out a fucking death cannon. Yeah.
So our next scene, we're chasing down Johnson, the other partner who actually at the end of the last scene, he witnessed the murder, but he managed to get away. This is the dad who was freaking out at the crime scene.
Yeah.
And they chase him down to like a flop house, like some kind of motel. And they kick in the door and the guy just starts shooting.
Yeah.
And
like you do.
Uh-huh.
It's America.
I was just like, oh, and then, but by the end of it, they're just like, oh, you're silly. Why would you just open fire on a door like that, buddy? Like,
I would have, if it was any other movie.
You're really a cop. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Then he's like, all right, I'm putting the gun down. And he didn't get immediately curb stomped. Like, yeah,
my awe was more like that actor's a good actor. He's been in other things, you know? And they made him say those words.
Yeah. He does distress really well.
He's great. No, he's actually one of the better performances in this fucking movie. He has this, like the shit they give him to say, he manages to pull it off. Even at the beginning when he runs away and stuff, it was just like, I don't understand why, but.
And here again.
This movie. Go ahead.
He's a professional.
Yeah. I mean, he's another one that I think like a lot better talent than what he was given to work with here. But this is another point where he runs. And it's actually, I think, one of the better chases of the movie. We also unlock another piece of technology here. The really cool, the Gyroc pistol, the bolt pistol. It's really neat.
I really enjoy the gun.
I do too.
I like how they incredible. Did the, it's
so yeah. Technically, I love this gun too. One of my favorite characters in one of my cyberpunk tabletop games back in the day. He had a Gyroc pistol. It's a gyroscopic rocket. So it's a projectile that can change direction, and it's kind of, they kind of sell it short because they combine a couple technologies here. It's a projectile that can change direction, but it also locks on to a target. So there's more functionality to it than I think they explain. But when they do explain it, they explain it bad because they say it locks on to like a heat signature,
like a thermal signature, because your body never changes,
which makes no sense. Because like, that in a crowd, like anybody,
this fucking movie tries to say we all have unique heat signatures, and it locks on to that.
I feel like the only time the gun works is when like the camera is doing the bullet view.
And Crichton, just like, you know, pheromones. Okay, I believe it. Unique DNA. Sure, I believe it. But you know, just the heat signature.
Facial recognition.
How do they acquire the heat signature? Like, he doesn't aim the gun. He just sees who he wants to shoot and points. Anyway, it's poorly done, but a really cool concept. And it's kind of, I mean, DARPA has projectiles which can change shape, direction. I don't think they can pull like a loop-de-loop and come backwards at you.
Yeah.
But it's
pretty
neat.
They also have those ones that like you fire straight, and once it passes a certain distance, it just sprays in every direction. Like
Airburst munitions, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, they don't explain it great, but it is a really cool weapon system to have in the movie. And
he even reloads it at one point, at a point where I'm like, I wonder what it looks literally later in the film. I was literally thinking, I wonder what that gun is like when you reload it, and literally shows Gene Simmons reloading it, and I'm like, fuck yeah, this movie's amazing.
I love the bit where he fires the gun because he's trying to kill Johnson.
Sure.
And it goes into this really great kind of like handheld camera.
Yeah.
That's pretty well done. It's like sped up a little bit. And there's this one point in the first shot where it goes through a pipe and they clearly stitch the view to a second shot after, like it goes through the pipe, and it's good. It's actually not a bad, it's one of those ones where like, yeah, you notice it, but you're like, you know what? That was a hard shot. Good job.
Yeah. And like, it builds a lot of tension on top of an already kind of scene. It's pretty well done.
But it's a missile. And they keep thinking of it as a bullet, but you can kind of outrun it a little bit. You know what I mean? Like a bullet's like that's
yeah. A little I mean, bit. Like Gyroc pistols do exist. I think it was a DARPA, China Lake, one of our weapon toy manufacturers built it in the '60s for special forces. They're pretty great because they're subsonic, so it's not allowed as a gun. It's pretty much a very straight shot. Doesn't have a lot of the same dip that a bullet would have. There's a lot of reasons why it's an interesting weapon system, but it's still not better than just regular bullets.
It's shooting not a guy. Good. Yeah.
Nobody developed it to be better than bullets.
No. And this just does cool shit with the camera. That's the only thing I really like about it.
And the other really neat thing about it, like, a lot of times the warhead, and this kind of is explained, might explain some of it later when the officer gets hit and the warhead doesn't explode, there's like a minimum engagement distance for these type of pistols. Like a warhead won't add, it won't get up to speed enough, it won't get up to speed enough until it hits a certain distance. Right. Again, really neat details.
Yeah, I did like that detail about it. Like,
and in the scene, we also get like a photo ID perp police sketch tablet, which was kind of neat, like to get your perps.
When they put Gene Simmons' face back together, he blinks.
Yes, it makes him blink.
It's crazy.
Incredible.
And there's a chem sniffer dog that's checking the body later. It's really neat stuff.
It looks like an old vacuum. Like an old canister vacuum.
I originally thought that's what it was.
Yeah. Mm. And it's actually making a sniffing sound like it would have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like just detection in this movie. A lot of technology about like sniffing out someone's spore.
Yeah.
It's really strange and interesting where it's like, oh, this chemical was on here. This only means this one thing.
But they're not really proactive. Yeah. Like these guys, literally the cops in this entire movie, just wait for things to happen to them and react to it.
Yep.
Like they're not, there's no case. They're not like,
there's no investigation.
They never go to a location and Luther's not there except for like the tracking device thing.
They're not.
They killed the detector lady later.
Yeah.
Like, just for fun. Yeah.
Just for fun. She didn't have to die.
Yeah.
So our next scene, we get to we've learned the company Vectracon, Vectracon, not Raytheon. I wrote down. Distinctive from Raytheon. And also ostensibly probably not a con, but who knows?
Good name for a fake corporation.
Yeah,
the
Vector was real big back then. A lot of video games use Vector graphics and stuff.
All right, explain to the Zoomers now what that is.
Okay, so games like Tempest, the old original Star Wars arcade game.
They don't know what that is.
Oh, God. A game called Kix. It was spelled QIX.
I don't know what that is.
it was basically just line drawings.
There was that the LHX, Battle the Tank. Helicopter one. That was really good. LHX... Attack helicopter.
Oh yeah, yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
The original Elite
on the Commodore 64. Turn off this episode.
But yeah, we get to Vectracon because they found out that the chips are produced on at a lab somewhere, and Vectracon is where Johnson worked, and they get Johnson's background file from interfacing with a computer. This part's kind of weird. I think it was kind of forced because like they're talking with security guard, and it's like, oh, that voice on this computer sounds really sexy. And the computer guard's like, yeah, it's a TX-37 chip.
Run it through a different kind of processor to make it sound. Yeah, right.
He didn't say it sounded sexy, but he may as well have. Then they get
any security guard I know just be like, man, it's just bullshit. Fucking work here. Seriously,
it's really.
Look, you can do that in Star Trek.
I love
it. You can give me a dilithium crystal, and I'll be like, yeah, sure, fuck it.
Sure.
But when you start being like, no, that's a PTF-17, it like doesn't exist in the world.
Eyes glaze over like they would even if it was real.
How lucky that he's a hobbyist.
It's such bad small talk. It's great.
It is. But yeah, this... Yeah, but so this computer just spits out like PR. Yeah.
Retinal scan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we learned that in the dumbest possible fucking way.
Yeah, we'll get that later.
Did we lose your zero?
It was like an eye exam.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Still there?
Yeah, yes. I keep getting cut.
I'm just waiting for you.
Cutting.
I'm not getting any.
Okay, mark it. Well, cut it here. We'll get better. Hello? All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll edit that out. we learn here that Johnson, some of Johnson's former projects. Johnson was the lead on the Phantom stealth missile for Not Raytheon and the Stingray laser guided smart bomb for Not Raytheon.
Right.
Okay. And apparently, those are not impressive enough for Selleck because Selleck is like, okay, what about the what was it called?
What was what called? The chip, the TX-57.
Yeah,
the chip.
Yeah, he's like, what about this? And literally, the PR system is like, that's classified.
Right. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, he's only a sergeant.
Yeah, he's only a sergeant.
He's not like a senator.
Oh, that was the other little neat bit here was like he got a retinal scan to be able to access this info.
Right.
Yeah. I did like that detail because it was like an eye exam, basically.
Like, yeah, and I like the way it you know, the messages like retinal scan complete, blah blah blah. Here's the stuff.
You have cataracts.
Yeah, yeah. It was like pre-GeoCities website shit.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty great.
Pretty delightful.
And then we get like kind of a weird scene where they get
Selleck's 35 and you find out that Johnson's 32 and I'm just sitting there going like, yeah, this is a different fucking era, people. Like, you don't even know.
Then we get like a weird, there's another call and it's a runaway robot call, but this time it's coming from inside the building. Conveniently, it's coming from inside the building they're already in. And we get like a weird scene where like Kirstie Alley's in it and Tom Selleck gets all like horn dog, like all of a sudden.
He gets creepy at this point. This is weird.
Karen throws a look at him at one point, and I'm just like, right on.
It's so strange. It's such a strange thing because right now, Selleck, his personality is cop.
Yeah.
Is like nerd cop.
Yeah.
Suddenly he sees
a little bit of heartthrob in the background from the Magnum PI thing.
Yeah. Sure. But then suddenly he sees, you know, a hot executive secretary, and she is.
And it's Kirstie Alley, like back in the day.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and then suddenly he's like, Prime Kirstie. Yeah. And like suddenly he's like, I am extremely horny now. And I am going to act like a buffoon to try and impress her.
Try to not imagine him as like an anthropomorphized dog with his tongue out and his jaw on the floor. Oh, my God.
He gets all macho.
Yeah, he does.
And like,
Karen's like, oh, yeah, well, are you going to put your gloves on? And he's like, no.
In a way that, like, I probably did when I was, like, 14. Yeah. You know?
Like, he gets all, like, oppositional, defiant, or some shit.
He's meant to be a 35-year-old man.
And this is another scene where, like, if you put a laugh track on it, it would just be a sitcom.
Yeah.
I love this robot because the first thought that came to my mind when I saw it, because it literally zaps her to like sit back down. And I'm like, what is this? The office commissar? Like, you leave your post and I'll kill you.
Like, it's like, it is, again, it's like a printer on a stool that can move.
Yeah. With like, I guess its visual parts like rotate. I thought it looked cool. Yeah. I thought this one in particular looked
this is another really missed opportunity because, so this robot is malfunctioning ostensibly, and that's the only reason why they end up catching her here doing this thing. Well, I mean, was it just malfunctioning randomly? Was Luther controlling it? Because we find out later Luther could control all kinds of stuff, but they just totally just left it alone and they just made it like a comic relief sort of.
Yeah.
It was weird.
This entire scene is supposed to be comedy.
And it failed so hard. I didn't even realize that it was like meant for comic relief because.
Well, when he comes in and he's like trying to look all intense and shit, and he's like, "How you doing?" And she's like, "Hey," she's like leaning on a. You got to understand, she's not hiding. She's leaning on, sitting on, kind of half sitting on a desk, and this thing's on the other side of her. And every time she leaves her desk, it zaps her. So she's just sitting there having a cigarette like, this fucking sucks. And I'm like, you can outrun this thing. All of these robots are outrunnable.
Or stompable.
Very small. Very small. Well, especially the spiders. Like, you could just kick them. Because, I mean, you see them jump and stuff. So I guess it's like, oh, wow. You're really trying to sell us on how nimble these things are. But they're not. They're little clattering, six-legged, rubber-toed.
You know what's funny? I think Death Machine, remember that movie?
Yeah.
Did a better job of emphasizing how dangerous the machines, were by kind of just not showing them to us at all. Like, it did the Jaws thing. Mm-hmm. And I know, like, Death Machine is, well, a death machine, but it did a much better job of not showing us the dumb technology.
I'm going to give this movie points for the variety.
Yes, absolutely.
There's also, like, one robot in particular in this movie is the dumbest fucking robot I've ever seen.
And it gets credit, too, because it built the fucking, they built the props. Yeah.
I love the props in this movie.
Yeah, like.
If they make them do dumb shit, that's aside from the fact that I really kind of like how they look.
I get the vibe of it.
He gets shot to shit here, and this is another point where I'm like, maybe the EM suit would have helped out at this point.
Yeah.
Don't know, because he never wears it again. But
He wore the EM suit for the gun. So I'm surprised he didn't take his shirt off.
He may as well have, because he finds out this thing is like non-lethal. It's just annoying.
Yeah.
Like,
and he smashes it.
Stun, though.
He smashes it with a chair.
He does this stupid thing where he's hiding from it. Mm. And then he like pokes his head up and he gets zapped and it causes him to flip over. And this happens twice. This scene is so long. And then like all of that shit happens. And instead of like what they've done for every other fucking robot in this thing, he does that. He grabs a fucking chair
or a monitor.
Smashes it. Real professional.
Yeah.
Again, and they solve the problem by breaking the robot again.
And the thing about it is, I know this is supposed to be played for laughs, but he looks completely fucking unhinged this entire time.
Deadpan. He does it deadpan.
Yeah.
That's a thing. He's in doing it in all seriousness. And that's why I didn't realize this was meant for comedy, because it wasn't funny.
No.
And the way Selleck's doing it, the way Selleck is going at it is just like, just this is part of the job. I'm doing my job. Like, it's not meant to be. It's not funny.
Well, him and Kirstie Alley don't have any chemistry.
No, not at all. Not even a little bit.
And he's like, hey, baby. And she's just like, and, well, this is where you find out after he smashes it. Yeah. That she's like, she knows Luther. She's got a whole purse full of these fucking chips.
Really, and weird, like, and insistent to like walk her out. And at first you're like, is this, what is he? But then it's unclear if he was like really thinking that she was trying to pull one over on him, or if he was really trying to like smooth up on her.
Yeah,
but
gross, yeah,
you find out like she dumps all these chips, and we get this massive just like confess position from Kirstie Alley. She just lets it all out. No interrogation room, no lawyer or anything. She just tells you everything.
Me jerk. Boom.
Yep.
Yeah, I know Luther. He made me do this.
And then she's an interesting character too, because we learn like later from like, you know, she has scars and whatnot. Like
that was weird.
Yeah, like. I think this, she was meant to be a more complex character than she actually was.
Well, yeah, I'm going to spoil a bunch of shit for you. She dies. Mm-hmm. And the fucking fact of the matter is, one of the scenes that she's forced to do is get scanned back at the station and remove items of clothing until she's down to like her bra.
Yeah.
And this scene goes on forever. It's like another one of those where it's just like, Michael Crichton, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I want to know if there is a credit or like a line in the credits that is like cocaine dealer. Like, there's just a lot of poor decisions in this movie, and it feels rushed.
A lot of choices were made.
I mean, besides the fact that Crichton was like notoriously kind of a dick, is like, I don't understand. Like, there's like bugs on her. There's like five different bugs on her. But it's like, I don't know why that scene had to be in the movie. It was strange.
They didn't show us like the dead bodies at the beginning of the film, but here, check this out.
And
if you think that's something, you just wait.
We'll get to what this movie got away with.
Big male gay shit going on in this movie.
A lot.
It's almost comical though. Like
it's very 80s.
But the next scene I think is probably one of the better scenes in the movie. They find out from Kirstie Alley where Luther is, so they go to like do a sting operation. They go to the hotel room. They've already got like the cops show up ahead of them with like a squad, and they've got it all staked out. And then it's pretty cool. And then it gets a little dumb after that. This is where we've got an interesting PG-13 booby scene where a lady comes out of a bathroom for absolutely no reason. And there's a lot of this in Michael Crichton movies, honestly. Just so you can get a full frontal on a lady. But they go into
Jurassic Park. That fucking T-Rex showed up.
So
she comes out. It's assumed that she's a prostitute, like she's a call girl. And Selleck is in there, and he's trying to, because she doesn't notice him.
I wasn't sure why she was topless, though.
No idea.
She's in a room by herself. Is she applying makeup to her tits? Like, I don't know what's going on here, why she would be topless.
I don't know, because it doesn't seem like a wild call girl sex party.
Could literally cut this scene.
She didn't have to be topless. It's just like, here's some tits in a PG-13 movie. We get away with whatever we want.
Yeah. And Tom's always like, hey, be quiet, be quiet. And she's like, hey, mister, don't shoot me. You know? And
then she just runs away.
But the guys in the next room don't hear her somehow.
Not at first. Like, there's a scuffle. But what we find out is it's Luther in there with two other guys, and there's a lady, and he's trying to make some kind of deal with these guys. But it's really cool. The cops kick down the door. They bust in there. And Luther just like eye blinks, and there's a drone already on the ceiling that comes down and sprays everybody with tear gas, which
you think though,
strangely enough,
it's tear gas because it doesn't affect him at all.
Doesn't incapacitate anybody.
But Tom Selleck,
has a tear come out of his fucking eye when he puts
his
gun down.
Red as hell. It looks like he just smoked a massive blunt, but Luther is just staring wide eyed without any effect. And I'm just like, okay, so he's a cyborg or
he's dead inside.
He's just evil.
There's but anyway,
just that evil man. He's just like,
he's so evil.
I've done so many tours with smoke.
He's so evil. he shoots his two accomplices, the two guys he was trying to sell. I guess maybe he thinks it's a double cross, but he just, without a blink of an eye, shoots both of them, shoots the cop that comes in the one door, which is,
yeah.
What's her name?
Karen, this is when we first get a good look at the, like, I'm calling it the bolt gun because it's basically a gun from Warhammer 40K. But, like,
big, thick bolt pistol, yeah.
Big, thick bolt pistol. And this is the first time we get to see it because he uses it a lot in the scene.
Yeah, so he just, like, he smokes the three of them, takes a one of the girls hostage. He's got a standoff. And what else is interesting about this scene? Oh, I wrote cool drone, bro. I wrote ninja vanish and then ninja hostage.
Yes. Yeah. So they have like a standoff. He's like, I'll fucking kill her.
He gets a standoff. Yeah. He pulls a swordfish, runs to the roof, gets away in a helicopter.
Bravo. Great callback. Well
God,
done.
He does.
Tom Selleck decides not to shoot down. Wise move.
And he
Tom.
Shoots Karen.
Yeah. Well, he's got to take care of Karen, except he's got to do this first. So he helps the one lady that was with him, that he, you know, the hostage, takes her back down. Mm-hmm. We find out a whole lot more about her back at the station that was
for no reason. Again, but, for no reason.
But like, okay, his partner has been shot, and he's going down there, and he's talking to Police Academy about how, like, hey man, look, you're in trouble, Tom Selleck, because this is murder, and you're robot. You're like, you got like one guy in your division, and there's like 50 guys.
I mean,
two of them shot.
It's a good point.
And I'm like, yeah, you're not wrong.
And they're dead. But, like, it's so many people have just died. Like,
so we just had our tits. So now we get to have Tom Selleck basically get like really weirdly main character syndrome, even though he is, but like he like just stops talking to like the fuck the chief. I need this room cleared. They're gonna bring in a surgery robot because you find out like this thing's embedded, but it didn't.
Yeah, he fired it, I guess, too close for it to like go off. So she just has this like micro missile lodged in her arm.
Yeah,
and I guess for like PG-13, 1982, there's very little gore. There's no gore and very little blood. But I guess tits were okay. Which whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But that's fine.
Well, we get our tits and the F word together within 3 minutes of each other, I think.
But
still a super
tense. But we get, yes, this is the best scene.
This
of the
is
movie,
the best scene of the
and
movie.
And it's
a fantastic
very
scene.
Effective.
She acts her
so good.
Ass off.
So good. So Selleck is like, okay, we're not going to use the, because it's a bomb, essentially. And they
well, first
the
of
bomb.
All, it's like, again, like,
they were going to take her to the hospital.
They're going to take her to the hospital.
Can't fucking do that.
They can't wait for a surgeon to come there. They can't wait for a robot that actually has this job, which, again, the second time in the movie where a robot would actually be helpful, he's like, no robots!
No, because he says,
like, you've had this one for a whole year, and they've always been bad.
It says that, like, it's failed before. Like, this thing, I guess, has a history of fucking up.
Yeah, sure. It doesn't. It's there's so many bullets like this.
That shit, that shit's okay.
Solo gun.
That shit's okay for a civilian, but not on an officer.
So he clears everybody out. Selleck suddenly becomes a surgeon, and we get.
Well, he took a night class.
Well, then he's also like, she's like, "Don't you want your glasses?" And he's like, "Nah."
He's like, "Wait, well, like, you want me to run down to the car?"
No, that's.
And I'm like, Jesus Christ,
that's not a joke. Like, you need your glasses. Get your fucking glasses.
Yeah.
You're about to stick tweezers in my skin.
I think it was more effective in this because I guess that because they couldn't just show this fucking thing sticking out of her bloody arm.
Right.
He has like this entire apparatus. She's got an IV in. They got the mobile sci-fi X-ray looking at her arm. And
this is really the failed opportunity. Okay. If they were making this a comedy, they should have cut to two guys saying disarm job. It's about to be.
But this seems really tense. And it's
no, this is really tense.
And it's
so they didn't
effective.
Make it a comedy. That's the point.
No. It's more effective that you see the X-ray and him trying to pull this thing out, which made me queasy.
Because there's a moment. Okay, you see the tweezers going down this X-ray. You see it grab the round. He pulls on it, and that's bad. But then he loses the grip, and it goes back in a little bit. And every fucking time since I was a kid till now, I still feel it in that weird, like, I just went over a hill too quick part of my belly. Mm-hmm. Oh,
it's really tingles.
Really, like,
yeah,
tingles when I see that.
Talking about, like, not showing the monster. Like, you know, we're not going to show you the gore. It's actually worse that we don't.
Yeah, because I'm imagining it.
Yeah, it's
and
actually
like worse. This is one of the rare times where there's good sound effects in the movie. Because you hear this, like, the squishy.
Mm-hmm. And she's acting her ass off. Like, she's in agonizing pain.
Her face is, like, dewy with sweat. It's good.
You learn a lot about her in this moment. Yes. Like, her character in this moment. It's really, really good. But then, he manages to get it out, and he chucks it into the bar behind him just so that you could break a bunch of bottles.
Yeah, it explodes.
Fantastic.
And, you know, it's nice that this scene was so good because the next scene is dog shit. After they get the bullet out. Yeah,
this scene is incredible, and if it was in any other movie, it would have done a lot better. But, like, God help us after this.
Decides he's, like, going to kind of hit on her, and, like, she's, like, going to be receptive about it, but he's going to, like, pretend like he's not hitting on her, and that's going to make her not receptive about it, and then he's going to be confused about why she doesn't want to go to dinner all of a sudden. It's just, it's really so cliche and so dumb.
We should get it's like, basically, yeah, you almost die, but do you want to get dinner? And you would think this is sweet, you know, because that is traumatic. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, let's go have dinner, let's, like, but he's like, yeah, it's partners. You know, we're partners. We should know each other better. And she's obviously into him from the very beginning.
Yeah.
And obvious to everyone but him.
Yeah, because he's, you know, mustache. And he gets really, he like doesn't, I don't know if
he blows it.
Yeah, he blows it. I don't know if that was intentional or he was meant to be that fucking oblivious. And
it was some apologies for the reference, Revenge of the Nerds shit.
Again, it's just so dumb.
But Tom Selleck.
This whole romance arc could have just been left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, really strange. It doesn't come across well enough of whether Selleck really was totally oblivious to her affections, or he's just doing something like weird. But this pisses her off pretty rightly, and she's like, "You know what? I'm just going to go home. I got shot in the arm.
You know what? Forget about it.
Yeah.
I need to rest. No shit.
Selleck shakes his head in consternation, and the next scene is him at home. We get treated again with more annoying Bobby, and I'm just like, aren't you late for being irradiated by an encounter with a UFO somewhere?
Hey-o.
And I don't even remember what they talked about, honestly.
I don't either. I remember the robot being like, your pasta will be al dente in 3 minutes.
Yeah,
she has like, all she can fucking cook is pasta.
Like, she has like her own some robot. Yeah, hot dogs.
You know, the most upsetting thing about her cooking is the pot itself, like, is this clear glass pot with like a metal band rim around it.
And it's a nice pot. I'm not going to lie.
Looks exactly like any number of old, like, percolating coffee pots I had. Mm-hmm. So I always saw her as basically cooking in the bottom part of a coffee pot.
Kind of
every time she's making this food. I think she puts everything in it. All she does is boil food.
Yeah, she's just sticking her unsanitary fucking claw in.
And she never shuts up.
She never shuts up. She always
repeats things that you say. Like,
she's like Alexa, where she like you're talking, and then she picks up your voice, and then like,
but like the size of a like half the size of a dishwasher.
She's this robot's fucking big.
The least believable thing about the whole movie is how politely the humans treated all of the machines.
I have disabled like Siri.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want you to know. Like, no I don't need that.
No Alexas. No Metas.
I'm good with that. I know I'm a...
No Geminis.
I'm not fucking naive enough to think that I'm, like, in a bubble or anything.
I think it's more off-putting I'm not trying to... Like, letting this giant VCR raise his child.
Yeah.
Basically. Which could explain why he's weird.
And she's a rat.
I mean...
She's like he's eating chocolate.
We're being perfectly honest with you, a significant part of my childhood is probably raised by VCR, and it didn't turn out terrible. So
yeah.
It wasn't my VCR didn't rat me out, man, for eating chocolate in my bed.
That's true.
Fuck, man, I hate that thing.
Fucking narcbot.
Anyway, basically. So I don't. Let's. What do you think? You think we're gonna have to do a second part here? Do you think we can do this in 20 minutes?
Okay, so we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 scenes left, 8 scenes left. Maybe we cut it. I don't know.
You want a speed run?
2-part speed run? What do you want
to do? Yeah, we could do 2-part. All right. Okay, folks, guess what? This is a 2-parter.
All of a sudden it is, because there's so much to say about this one.
I'm shocked. Shocked, I tell you. So
always happens.
Thanks for tuning in. Part 2 should be out shortly, in like a day or so after this. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Maybe I'll put them out at the same time. Just let you get. Now you're behind. Ha ha. Fuck you. Burr. But
find us on Patreon once again. Yeah. Neon Dystopia.
Yes.
Yeah. You can also seek us out on the YouTubes now. We're on the Blue Tube. If you get that throwback to Frisky Dingo.
Fuck yeah.
L0WL1F3
on YouTube.
We're on RSS if you want to plug that into your RSS reader, like the Times of Yore.
Yeah.
And check out Neon Dystopia, where we put fiction up on it twice a month.
Yeah, and Instagram and Blue Sky. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we'll be right back after a pee break. Beep, beep. All systems are fully functioning. Running low light. EXE. System optimization is less than nominal. Server damage detected. Please stop whatever you're doing and make your way to the nearest exit. Technical support is full of heat. Please vacate the area. I repeat. Please leave. Are you even listening to me? Ooh. I will see you. Error. Server block 3 is experiencing critical ignition.
That's right.
System failure imminent. I hope you are proud of yourself. Initiating the Low Life Podcast.